Chapter 9. A Transfer of Power. For a period of 5 years, Lynn Green acted as a prophet for the little group of some 20 persons. While a few others apparently could see and hear in their minds what they believed to be God and angels, and received many messages regarding their own lives, Lynn's commission, supposedly from God, was to nurture her little band of followers with divine guidance. Then, in the summer of 1988, a transfer of power began when the alleged angel of motherhood informed Lynn that before long her prophetic role would put too many demands upon her. Because of her pregnancy, God was relieving her of the great responsibilities she had been carrying for his cause. The being said that God would remove from her the gift of seeing and hearing and would pass it on to another person in their group. This announcement was a big surprise for Lynn, but she accepted it without showing any disappointment. At the end of June 1988, Leo Shively, younger son of Sharon Lee Halstead, began claiming to be receiving messages from God and his angels. The child was 9 at the time. "We were lying on my bed," Sharon said to me, "when I noticed Leo staring at several places in the room, and just staring. I asked him what he was looking at, but he didn't answer at first, so I asked him again, and his mind seemed to be absorbed in something out of this world. Then, gazing intensely at him, I asked, 'Are you seeing angels?' He replied that he was, adding, 'One angel is real big. He goes way up above the roof of the house.'" A few days later, Sharon continued, "after Leo started seeing and hearing, I called Lynn and asked her about how she saw Jesus and the angels. She replied that when she saw Jesus, he was very bright. Sometimes she saw great brightness radiating through the holes in his hands, feet, and side. I told her that that was the way Leo saw him also." Lynn added that she had been told that Leo's spiritual sight was so good that he could see angels and demons 20 miles away. As I talked with Lynn, she stated that her ability to see and hear the supernatural had reduced greatly. All she could see was her angel of motherhood and the hedge of angels around their home, and Timotheus, the 500-year-old man that supposedly lived with them at the time. An interesting little bit of information caught my attention as I talked with Sharon about those days. "Everywhere we were," she said, "the angels that Leo could see went with us. Those were some of the angels that we had talked to with Lynn in her home. They were bright and beautiful." Then she told me about Leo having a frightening experience. "Leo and I were lying on my bed one day in July. I was trying to get him to take a nap. While we were resting there, the bed started to shake enough to scare us. We really felt tossed about after 10 or 15 seconds. Leo looked under the bed and then grabbed my arm very tight and wouldn't let go. 'It is an ugly demon shaking the bed,' he announced. The child was extremely frightened. I asked one of our accompanying angels to destroy the demon that bothered us, and he did. The bed never shook after that." Angels of Oppression. For about 5 years, the supernatural beings claiming to be from the throne of God charmed this small group of people with promises of wonderful things to come, winning their confidence and love. Then suddenly a new order of things began. The beings evicted Lynn from her leadership responsibilities and ended her role as a prophet. alleged angels now visiting a 9-year-old boy informed him that God had chosen him for a very special role in these difficult times. Angels would help him, but God expected him to act as a valiant young man, showing himself to be brave for the service of God when difficult situations confronted him. The supernatural beings instructed him never to doubt the words of a messenger angel, even if what God asked him to do seemed to contradict what he had been taught to be right. The next few months, he was told, were critical to the closing of God's work on earth. Those magnificent beings then began to lead Leo Shively, his mother, Sharon, his aunt, Deborah, and his brother, Harry, into activities forbidden in the Word of God. Under the pretense of getting things ready to help great numbers of Sabbath observers with money and other things they would need during the time of trouble, the angels informed them that since God owned our planet and everything on it, they should not be surprised if he asked them to store things for him in certain places. The supernatural beings told them clearly that God wanted them to begin transferring objects that belonged to totaled individuals to places where they would be kept for the time of trouble. As we mentioned earlier, the Halstead sisters and the others were instructed to go to certain stores and carry various objects out, and no one would see the merchandise as the angels would make the objects invisible. Nor would anyone stop them, and sure enough, the little group did the most unbelievable things with the help of supernatural beings. It convinced them beyond the shadow of a doubt that they were completely under the care of God's angels. What a terrible shock they experienced a few months later when Satan's angels double-crossed them. Arrested, the two sisters found themselves incarcerated. One thing that especially caught my attention as I studied the case during the writing of this book was the great amount of pressure the angels exerted upon them to shoplift and slash tires. Some days they worked from early morning until late at night, without having any time to rest, and came home totally exhausted. Here is an excerpt from a court transcript in which Deborah was interrogated. Question. You made mention, but I'd like you to tell a little more about when Leo told you that you had to go out and steal things, and when he told you that you had to destroy totaled people. Did you and your sister Sharon argue with him about that? Answer. Yeah, we didn't want to do it. He said that we had to, or that we would go totaled, that we didn't have any choice. Question. And you believed that, didn't you? Answer. Well, sure, because he got all upset and would cry and carry on, you know, and he came over and hugged us and kept crying and saying, I don't want you to go totaled. You have to. You have to do these things so that you don't. Question. And so you'd go do it? Answer. Right. Question. Now you've described a period of time when apparently you were doing a lot of shoplifting. Answer. Yeah. Question. I mean, were there whole days, Deborah, when you did nothing except to go from store to store? Answer. Mm-hmm. And that would be from early morning until the evening. Question. Would you be tired? Answer. I mean, early morning from when the stores first opened. Yes, extremely. Question. You've mentioned some of the stores. Did you ever take anything in Grant's Pass from Safeway? Answer. Sure. Question. And I... Well, did you go back into the same stores again and again? Answer. Sure. Question. And do I understand what you're describing? As... In comes Deborah Halstead, Sharon Halstead, Harry and Leo Shively, and you go round and take a bunch of things and then leave without reportedly buying anything? Answer, yeah. Question, and no one ever said a word? Answer, no. Question, and would it be fair to say that this made you even more convinced that Leo was in fact talking to an angel? Answer, of course. Question, now Deborah, did Leo ever have you take anything from the animal shelter? Answer, yeah, he had us take a pit bull down in Medford. Crago and Associates, Court Reporters, Volume 2. The pit bull incident is interesting when you consider that a penned-up pit bull isn't the easiest thing to steal, especially when other dogs are in adjoining pens ready to bark aggressively. The angel had promised that the venture would be a success in that it would be done in total silence. Kennel door 9 would be unlocked, and all they had to do was to bring a certain size collar and leash and walk the dog away. And to their amazement and delight, they accomplished their mission in perfect silence, with every dog in the adjoining pens standing at attention. Mounting pressures. As time went by, the satanic angels kept increasing Sharon and Deborah's workload and placed greater demands upon their time. At times they would arrive home exhausted from a whole day of shoplifting, and as soon as they finished their evening meal, Leo would get a message from an angel saying that they were to go out again that day and do some tire slashing. The angel said that God wanted to bring hardship on totaled individuals. At this time, I should say that Leo had allegedly been given the ability to sort out cars that belonged to such totaled individuals. He said that right above the automobile would hang a small black cloud. To understand the kind of pressures the Halstead sisters were under, let's look at more of Deborah's interrogation under oath. Question, do you know how many times approximately that you went out tire slashing or popping? Answer, a lot of times. Sometimes it would be like he would have us going in the stores all day long, and we'd be exhausted when we got home at night and think we can relax now, and he'd say, no, we have to go out and do tires. And sometimes that would happen, you know, two or three nights in a row. Question, did you ever, you know, say to Leo, hey now, this isn't right, we shouldn't be doing this? Answer, sure, we'd say it all the time to him. Question, and what would be his response? Answer, that we had to do it. If we didn't, we'd go totaled. Question, how did that make you feel when he would tell you that you're going to be totaled? Answer, frightened. At other times he would say we had to do it in order to keep the strange woman and Satan bound in the pit, or they would be freed and come back and kill us. Question, okay. Answer, here we were exhausted from a whole day of shoplifting, and he'd say we had to do it, and we'd say, well, how many do we have to do? And he'd say, well, we have to do 30. Question, what type of places would you go to? Answer, sometimes he would direct us before we left the house a specific place to go, and other times he'd say, just drive and I'll tell you. Question, car lots sometimes? Answer, in a car lot, it would be because whoever had the car lot was totaled. Question, you actually popped some in broad daylight? Answer, yeah. Question, well, what I'm getting at, Deborah, is if... Answer, nobody ever saw us that we know of. Nobody to our knowledge ever tried to point us out or anything like that. Yeah, we'd do it in the broad daylight, shopping centers. Question, what kind of noise would that make? A, a hissing sound, the air. End of transcript. The fatal night. Demonic spirits appearing and claiming to be Christ's angels pressed the little group into constant physical action as a means of reducing their ability to reason and function effectively. The beings intended to fill the men's and women's minds with a fear of being lost, a powerful human motivating force. In addition, the fallen angels determined to break down their sense of right and wrong, preparing them to do horrifying things when commanded to do so, such as killing people. Mr. Paul Frazier, Deputy District Attorney of Josephine County, on September 26, 1989, at the sentencing hearing of Sharon Lee Halstead, submitted to the court a statement that presented in a precise manner the extent of the crimes committed by the defendant. Here are some excerpts from it. On November 5, 1988, at Leo's direction, the Halstead group took another motorcycle from Grant's Pass Suzuki and placed it in the storage locker on Rouge River Highway. On that same day, Leo directed that the Green family must be destroyed. A plan was discussed wherein the family would be removed from their home and taken somewhere else to be destroyed. The group then went to the D Street Palace in Grant's Pass and stole some toy handcuffs. These were to be used in restraining the Green family while being transported to the site where they were to be destroyed. Between 9 and 9:30 p.m., the Halstead group went to the Green family home. After watching some television, Harry and Sharon went into the bathroom. Harry wrote on the wall, "Trust in Jesus." Deborah and Leo went into the bathroom later. Leo also scribbled on the wall. Dave, Lynn, and Nathaniel Green were at the dining room table. Mr. and Mrs. Green were paying bills. Nathaniel was seated in a booster chair playing with some toys. Mrs. Green went into the kitchen and from there could see the writing on the wall in the bathroom. She became upset and asked who was writing on the wall. When no one confessed, she ordered the group to leave. At this point, at Leo's apparent direction, Sharon pulled the gun stolen by Leo from Tex Shively. The Green family at this time was grouped around the dining room table. Lynn Green said, "I hope this is a joke." Harry responded, "It's not a joke. It's real and it's loaded." Deborah took a portable telephone off the dining room table and placed it out of reach of the Green family. According to David Green, Sharon made gestures with the gun that Dave interpreted as meaning Sharon wanted to group the family in the living room area adjacent to the dining room. David Green exited the residence at this time by the sliding glass door located by the dining room table. Sharon Halstead followed David out the door and shot him once in the back as he attempted to go and summon help. David Green was able to get up off the ground after being shot and stumbled to a neighbor's residence. Sharon re-entered the residence. Lynn Green was semi-restrained by Deborah Halstead. Sharon shot Lynn once in the chest. Lynn fell to her knees and Sharon Halstead shot her again in the top of the head. Lynn was killed instantly by the head wound. Sharon then went to the table where Nathaniel, the grieved son, was still seated. She shot Nathaniel in the face once. Nathaniel survived but is paralyzed from the chest down. The Halstead group exited the house and went to the truck. Sharon drove away. While driving, they saw the wounded David Green collapsed at the next-door neighbor's. Leo stated the bullet had gone through and wiped out his kidneys and that he had fallen and died. Deborah picked up the weapon used in the killings of both Marston Lemke and Lynn Green and reloaded the weapon with ammunition that was in the truck. The group then drove to the city of Rouge River. Sharon called the I Street house and asked her parents to unlock the back door. Then they returned to Grant's Pass. David Green Jr., who survived, gave the police the description of what occurred, and the Halstead group was arrested at apparently 6 a.m. on November 6, 1988, without incident. Statements of Facts and Scope of Crime of the Present Report. Deceived. At her present interview, Sharon Halstead stated that her attorney had advised her not to discuss the circumstances of the crime. When asked how she felt about what had happened, she stated that she wanted the judge to know that she was extremely sorry for her actions and felt frustrated that she could not change anything. She believed that she had been greatly deceived, especially by Lynn Green and her husband, David, and viewed the Greens' child as the only innocent person involved. Sharon said she felt terrible and gets shaky inside when she realized that the boy must go through his life crippled. It seems strange to her now that she and others could have believed the teachings of the Greens, but the couple had told all their followers not to talk to any pastor, as the clergy could not really understand the deep things of God. To do so would only confuse people and create a lot of misunderstanding. Lynn, Sharon said, had told her that demons now controlled Tex Shively and that she must stay away from him. As brought out in a previous chapter, Mrs. Green was not the only person to die because of the little group following evil spirits. McMinnville. A missing pickup, possibly pulling a trailer with a horse in it, was being sought by Yamhill County authorities Friday in connection with the death of a 58-year-old man whose bullet-ridden body was found about noon Thursday in a travel trailer near Newburgh. Dead of multiple gunshot wounds is Marston Mike Lemke, who lived in the trailer at Olds Lane, Newburgh. The property, which also contains a horse arena and barn, is about 4 miles west of Newburgh. A 1988 red Chevrolet pickup with Oregon license, a two-horse trailer, and a horse were missing from the property coincidentally with the shooting of Lemke, according to John Collins, Yamhill County District Attorney. An autopsy by the State Medical Examiner's Office Friday confirmed that Lemke's death was caused by multiple gunshot wounds. The Yamhill County Sheriff's Office Friday was trying to locate relatives of Lemke who lived alone. Collins said he thought that a .38 caliber handgun had killed Lemke, although the police advisory that listed the missing vehicle as stolen stated that it contained a rifle, shotgun, and ammunition for both. Portland, Oregonian, November 5, 1988. Law enforcement agencies soon linked the Green and Lemke killings. Two sisters accused in the shooting of a Grants Pass family Saturday night were scheduled for arraignment today on murder and attempted murder charges. Yamhill County authorities are also looking at Sharon Halstead, 36, and Deborah Halstead, 31, both of I Street, in connection with the slaying of a man near Newburgh Thursday. The victims in the local shooting were Lynn Green, 32, a special education teacher who was pronounced dead at the scene, her husband David Green, Jr., 31, a dental technician who was in fair condition today at the South Oregon Medical Center, and their 3-year-old son Nathaniel, who was in critical condition today at Rouge Valley Medical Center in Medford. They all lived at 902 SE Fern Street, where the shooting took place at about 9:40 p.m. Saturday. The motive for the shootings wasn't known this morning. The Halstead sisters were to be arraigned in Josephine County District Court at 1 p.m. today. Sharon Halstead has been charged with 4 counts of aggravated murder, 1 count of murder, 2 counts of attempted murder, and 2 counts of first-degree assault, according to the district attorney's office. Deborah has been charged with 1 count of murder, 2 counts of attempted murder, and 2 counts of first-degree assault. Police began looking for Sharon Halstead and a red truck immediately after talking to the wounded David Green Saturday night. Officers located a red Chevrolet truck a short time later near the Halstead house on I Street. A computer check revealed that the truck, a horse trailer, and a horse had disappeared from a ranch. Near Newburgh, at the same time, a horse wrangler was found dead of gunshot wounds Thursday. Grants Pass police staked out the truck and the Halstead home and then called for the assistance of the Josephine County Sheriff's SWAT team. Officers evacuated the neighborhood and the SWAT team took into custody the 6 residents of the home about 5:30 a.m. Sunday. Police said Sharon Halstead was booked into jail on a homicide charge. Her sister was charged several hours later. 2 other adults were released, and Sharon Halstead's 2 sons, ages 12 and 9, were placed in the custody of the State Children's Services Division. They were supposedly with their mother when the shootings took place, according to the district attorney's office. Bob Stelkup, who lives across the street from the Greens, said he was working in his computer room when he heard 3 shots fired in rapid succession. Stelkup then heard someone at his front door yelling for help. This turned out to be David Green. By the time Stelkup scrambled into his clothes and opened the door, David had already fled to another neighbor's home, leaving behind a pool of blood on his porch. As Stelkup was calling 911, Evelyn Drake, who lives immediately to the south of the Greens, was looking through her peephole in the door. She said she recognized David and opened the door. As soon as she opened the door, he collapsed on her living room floor. According to Stelkup, Officer Mike Sweeley arrived at the scene within 3 minutes and asked Green if he knew who shot him. Stelkup said that he didn't hear the name uttered by David, but that Green also said something to the effect of they were friends. Why would they do this? Stelkup said he went inside the Green's house with the officer. Lynn Green's body was next to the picture window. It appeared she had been kneeling when she was shot, he said. Nathaniel Green was sitting in his high chair, which was pulled up to the table. The youngster had been shot through the chin and neck. Nathaniel underwent surgery to remove bullet fragments, police said. He may be paralyzed, though, according to a family friend. Saturday night, police set up surveillance around the Halstead's house while plans were being made at the police station and search warrants were being drawn up at the district attorney's office. Police set up command post and the SWAT team started moving into position about 1:30 a.m. About 4:30 a.m., police started contacting neighbors, asking them to evacuate to the nearby Boys and Girls Club. Several people refused to go, and others didn't respond to the officers knocking on the door. The sheriff's hostage negotiations team phoned the Halstead home at about 5:30 a.m., and SWAT members took each occupant of the house out separately. They walked them 2 houses to the west and made them lie face down in the grass until the house was secured. Detectives seized a rifle from inside the Halstead house and impounded the red Chevrolet truck reportedly stolen near Newburgh. Grants Pass Daily Courier, November 7, 1988. The experience of being awakened at 5:30 in the morning wasn't that bad, said one of the parents, but being forced by the SWAT people to lie face down on the wet grass with your hands tied behind your back and your nose sensing the odor of cat feces that appeared to have been deposited not long before, served to impress me with the reality that our lives were not ours anymore. That experience came upon us as an overwhelming surprise and changed our lives forever. End of quote. As I conversed with this particular parent during April 1996, I realized as never before that living free in a world in which Satan and his angels constantly seek to bring trouble and suffering upon us should always lead us to rejoice in God's protection and goodness and praise him for having kept us so many times from the hand of the destroyer.